Crime Curious is a true crime podcast that takes an in-depth look into real cases through the lens of a trained investigator and former prosecutor turned judge.
If you are sensitive to expletives, anatomical descriptions, and accurate descriptions of crime scenes, this podcast may not be suitable for you.
Have you or someone you love been a victim of a crime that's still unsolved? Crime Curious has teamed up with one of the top private investigation services in the Indiana and surrounding area. If you have listened to us long enough, you know that we do not seek out services or products that are meaningless to us or hold no real value. So you can trust us when we say that Corbett Investigations comes with decades of experience you won't find anyplace else. Corbett Investigations is run by a former homicide commander of one of the country's most successful homicide units, has put over 400 people in prison for homicide, handled over 1,100 death investigations, and solved 33 cold case murders. To be real with you, Mr. Corbett had a really difficult time telling us what we should highlight in this segment because he does not like to sound like he's bragging. Solving crimes has been his life's passion, and he has never done it for the accolades or recognition. He has a whole team behind his services that help him be so successful, as they specialize in things like bloodstain analysis, ballistics, crime scene reconstruction, and forensic pathology, just to name a few. When you contact Corbett Investigations, you talk directly with Tim Corbett. He is hands-on with every case and can travel anywhere that's needed to get the job done. Corbett Investigations prides itself on honesty, truth, feet to the ground, real investigation work, and the strength to stand up to whatever is in the way of solving the crime. Corbett Investigations specializes in complex homicide cases, sex offenses, and criminal investigations that are old and new. Tim and his team have a reputation for finding witnesses and information that others could not. Although we hope none of our listeners ever need private investigation services, if you do, we recommend contacting Corbett Investigations and mention this segment on Crime Curious for a free consultation. Contact Tim Corbett today at 574-229-8115. You can also check them out on Facebook at Corbett Investigative Services, Inc. or their email, tim@tcorbett.org. That's tim@tcorbett.org. Thanks for listening, and now on to the show. Welcome to Crime Curious. I'm Charnel.
I'm Megan.
We're shaking our gree-gree. All of it.
It shooketh.
For good luck here. Before we get started, Megan, I want to give listeners Jen and Kennedy a little shout out. They are local listeners. I went out to dinner at a new establishment that just opened in our area.
Yes. I've been meaning to go there.
It was lovely. I highly recommend it. But they approached me, and with the help, and this is going to surprise you, of husband Matt.
Really?
Husband Matt brought them over because they
listen. And said, here's some fans.
And said, they listen and they love the podcast. And they're like, well, we don't want to bother you. I'm like, thank you so much for telling me you love the podcast.
I'm here to sign autographs.
I was not like that. Yes. But
and I do not have permission to share her name, but I also just wanted to throw out there, I don't know if you've been in our private chats that we have today, even this is, for our general audience, but B, who has sent us a number of requests and stuff, went through a major medical issue over the weekend and is still recovering from that, and so I wanted to send her our thoughts and prayers and all of, like, all the good juju and spirit stuff.
Oh, thank you, because I haven't been able to check that today.
It's been I'll inform you after.
Okay, so, very busy work day. Yes, thoughts and prayers with you then. And yeah, just, you know, if you see us out and about, I do love
come
hearing.
Come say hi.
Yes. I love it when people say that they like our work. It
I know you're going to find this hard to believe, but with what I do, when people approach me to say things like that, it's a lot better than the usual reasons that I get approached.
For real. For exactly. Real. That's For why real. I like this one.
I know. Yes. Oh, I know you. You took my kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a way different sure warm is. Feeling.
But I also just loved that, you know, husband Matt doesn't listen, right. But he still supports us in his own way. That sure was does. Sweet. That was sweet. So I'm going to tell you about a case today that is a pretty good example of, I don't know, when obsession goes wrong in all the ways it could go wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a narcissistic, obsessed abuser case for you today. And it took place in Tampa, Florida in 1983.
Okay.
Good year.
Was it a good year?
It was. It was for me.
It's a vintage Florida year.
Came out of my mom's vagina that year.
Excellent.
And why do my children always walk in when I'm saying perverted things?
Right.
Hi, son. It is just my luck. I'm going to leave that in too. You guys should know that we're just two real life gals here.
Talking about vagina.
Yeah. Independently producing our own podcast. So here we are. This case isn't one where I can give you a lot of details on the individuals who are involved on their life before the crime. It's just not readily available. But I feel, Megan, that a lot of times we are here to give a voice to those who can't speak for themselves anymore and just remember that they existed even without all the childhood details and the deep dive that we are typically known for. So I don't think that we should shy away from
covering
the cases that maybe aren't going to be as in-depth. But I want to start with George O'Neill of Tampa, Florida. George was a hardworking man, and he falls in love with a woman named Martha Leathers. Now, Martha and George end up being in a long-term committed relationship, but they didn't ever marry.
I see a lot of those.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, they have 5 beautiful children together.
Okay. He was like, but I just don't want to be tied down for the long run.
Yeah. These 5 kids, that's totally
fine. These 5
fine,
kids are so easy to not keep me attached to you, but a ring, my God, woman.
The government. They can't get involved.
It's true.
With documents. We are married in our heart. Yep. So as with all relationships, there were ups and downs. And for a little while, Martha, they separate. And even though they were still co-parenting very well, Martha started dating another man very briefly named Henry Lee Marshall. Okay? It only lasted a couple of months, both for her to realize that Henry Lee Marshall is not a good dude, and also for her and George to have some separation, some time to get their affairs in order, work things out.
Or see if they want to work them out.
Yes, and they do. And so they make up, they recommit to one another. Now, I don't have details. I don't know if George was seeing somebody else in that time or not.
Well, they're not legally married. And they were operating as a family unit, mm-hmm. there was nothing to stop her from moving on if she needed to. And she looks like she tried.
She tried. Yep. In that time of struggle. But the point is they make up. And like I said, they recommit to one another. They don't get married, but they are a family unit again. And Henry Lee Marshall, as any man with 3 first names, does not take this news very well. Just kidding. I'm sure most of you aren't killers. A lot of you are, though.
A lot of you are.
It's a little bit of a red flag when a man introduces himself and goes by 3 first names.
You immediately, it goes off the alarm in your brain and you're like, can you talk to me about your last few relationships?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It actually came up at work the other day, and I was like, yeah, I've got you pegged. I know.
Right. I know who you are, buddy.
No. So anyway, he doesn't take this news. Henry Lee, not the type of man that likes to be turned down. Okay. But he also doesn't like to be turned down for another man.
Yeah.
All right.
There's a jealousy piece.
There is. So he's very jealous. He's very abusive and possessive, which is why he and Martha are no longer together. And despite Martha making it abundantly clear that she and George were committed to one another and that she had no interest in Henry Lee Marshall, I would think that the 5 kids would have given it away.
Maybe.
But I guess Henry didn't get the message because he refused to leave the couple alone.
All right, so he is continuing to try to get her to come back to him, even though she's clearly back with her significant other.
Correct. And I actually happened to stumble across a TV. I think it's the ID channel. It's no longer on anymore, called I Almost Got Away With It. You might have seen it when you're scrolling through cable and whatnot.
Yes.
They did an episode on this case. And they actually interviewed Henry Lee Marshall. So you could check that out. I have it in the show notes. I can't remember what season and episode it was, but it will be linked in the show notes. And if you would like to hear Henry Lee Marshall's side of the story.
Really?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay.
So what happens is Henry is a frequent stalker and harasser of George and Martha and their kids. I mean, their kids are in various ages at this point in time, but, you know, they are exposed to this. Well, what happens is George starts exchanging a series of verbal warnings to Henry to say, stay away from my woman, right? We got the peacock feathers up a bit.
He's prancing around, strutting.
Yes.
Just jumping up on cars, pooping on windshields.
Yes, like they do. And right. Just saying, this is my hen.
Yeah.
Go find your own. She's made it clear she's not with you anymore and we are back together.
I understand.
The verbal warnings didn't work. And this is where we don't condone violence, but I do understand how things can escalate.
Many times I have seen situations that have turned violent where I said, well, that's illegal, but I get why.
Yeah. As a human, I have understanding.
Even in my current position, I think that's something that a normal person should weigh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Why? Why did it come to this?
Exactly. What initiated that? And so what happens here is George and one of his sons actually get into a physical altercation with Henry, hoping to scare him off. Now, I tried very hard to find the age of the son, because for me, as doing what I do for a living and what you do for a living, that piece, that little nugget of information.
Did you drag your 15-year-old out to start a fight, buddy?
Or is he 18? Yeah.
Yeah, is he an adult?
Right. That makes a difference. It shouldn't, but it does in my brain.
It does in terms of parenting, I believe.
Right, right. And so, or was it a situation where the son is just kind of like, you know what? I'm going to take matters into my own hands.
And dad went with him.
Yes. And Henry
totally
then
could have happened.
Him,
and if we don't have the information, then we're just kind of speculating. But
And every source that I looked up, again, because we're, with the exception of that documentary, which isn't, I mean, it's a half an hour long, guys. There's only so much information.
It's not giving you all the info
too.
In the world. And there's commercials because, you know, money.
Right, exactly. It's really only 12 minutes of information.
Correct.
The rest is just commercials.
Right.
And so the articles that I found on this just kept mentioning George's son. It did not, I couldn't get an age, which actually made me think perhaps he was a minor because he wasn't named or aged. So
okay.
I'm like, all right, might have been a minor. Anyway.
I'll just hope he was an older minor if he was one, like 17.
Oh, I'm thinking for sure.
Like you're grasping at adulthood and possibly going to jail, but at the same time you're like, let's give this a shot. I'm a man.
Well, I can tell you neither one of these men are super petite in stature.
Okay.
So
you got some big fluffy polar bear, dad bod kind of men.
Henry, when he's older and is being interviewed, you know, he's more frail, right? But you can tell that he was probably pretty muscular back in the day. His mugshot, he's not a small dude.
It's how my mugshots look too.
Yeah, mine too, right?
They're like, you can tell she was muscular at one point, but now she's kind of old and frail.
Yeah, well, the camera adds 10 pounds.
It does. And not to the right places.
No, exactly. Like, oh God, she's 110 pounds.
Except
all in her ass.
Right, except for her, the extra neck she has in that picture. And I'm like, I don't have that many necks. How are
we just growing necks? That's weird.
Know.
Yeah. So you can tell, I would think that with the son being part of a physical altercation, he had to have been an older child that felt he could maybe hold his own.
How do they seek this guy out, or where do they seek him out?
Oh, they all live around each other. Don't you worry. Okay.
So they know where each other lives.
They do. They absolutely do. Now, shockingly, the act of violence against Henry does not deter him from wanting to be with Martha.
I can see that.
Okay.
You do a lot of things for love.
Well, and you know what he decides to do? He's going to plot him some revenge.
Okay, so you guys assaulted me. I'm going to return the favor.
You came and kicked my ass to tell me to stay away from Martha. And instead,
and I will see your ass kicking and raise you one other violent offense.
And what he raises him is trying to burn George and Martha's vehicles.
I mean, arson's a big leap.
Well,
we just leapt.
And he leapt to the gun shop and got himself a gun.
This is of concern as well.
Do you want to know why he wanted to
get a gun? Yes, I do.
No, oh. I'll get to the gun. Okay. But the burning the vehicles. So what happens is that February 1983, George and Martha decide that we've had enough and we're moving away from Tampa.
Oh, so they were going to load up and leave.
Yeah, they're
sick
of this.
So if he burns their vehicle down, she can't leave.
They can't. Yeah, exactly. We got to keep her. Got to keep her here.
Yeah, that wasn't even a revenge type of crime. That while it may have been partially revengeful, that was also, I'm going to stop with my, this is obsessive.
It is.
He wants to keep her there.
Yes, absolutely. Abusive.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So he tries to do that. He's caught in the act of trying to burn these vehicles. And once again, Henry and George exchange a physical altercation with one another. As to be expected, you try to burn my car down or my Jeep, I'm going to kick you real hard.
We're going to throw bows, as you would say.
Yes. Yes, I do say that. Yep. And we are. We are going to. Mine are little and pointy.
They would hurt.
But I think they would hurt and possibly knock an eye out.
So, a testicle, at least.
Oh, for sure. Hide your testicles.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I almost just said hide your testicles because Charnel's coming. That's not what I meant.
Oh, I like it though. I think you need a shirt.
It's a Monday night.
It is.
After working like on a too. Monday, and we sound like it.
We do. We do.
So, of course, Megan, this just angers Henry Lee Marshall even more because he got his ass kicked and he didn't get to burn any vehicles.
No, he got busted.
He did. So he's decided, you know what, there's only one way that I'm going to be able to keep Martha for myself and keep her from leaving, and that's just, I'm going to have to kill George.
Oh, no.
Because nothing says I love you like the murder of one's partner.
I don't feel like he did a lot of research, because
Google wasn't available in the 1983s.
Yeah, I just, I feel like if you kill the person she told you she's decided to be with, she's not going to then with open arms say, well, he's dead now, might as well try this
right,
out.
Right, I have no other choice then. Must be I have to be with
oh,
you, Henry.
Also, I'll totally forgive you for killing him.
The father of my five children?
Yeah, no.
Sure. You know what this tells me?
You know, the father of your five children could be the biggest egotistical asshole in the entire world and she could move on. And if it was me, I would still be upset if somebody killed the father of my children.
Absolutely. Yes, because that affects my children.
I didn't want him anymore, but he, right. Yeah, he's my children's
absolutely.
Dad.
That affects my children, and that is not okay. I know.
Carry on.
So here we are. It's February 1983, and George Raymond O'Neill, who was 35 at the time, was sitting inside his car outside of what was called the Blue Note Bar that is on the corner of Nebraska and 3rd Avenue.
Where are we again?
We're in Tampa, Florida.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The Blue Note Bar sounds familiar.
Oh,
okay.
God. Well, you weren't there in 1983.
No, if I was, that was terribly inappropriate parenting because I would have been five.
Right. Oh, your mom listens to this too. So I know she's going, you weren't, Megan.
No,
but
I know I
later
wasn't.
Maybe later in life.
Yes.
About 7 p.m., a man approached the car and began shooting George O'Neill with a 38 caliber handgun. Now, miraculously, George actually tried to escape. He shifted the car into reverse. Henry kept shooting, but he was at least like able to get it in reverse.
He's trying to escape and
he
save
was.
His life.
And then he actually fled from the car as Henry kept shooting. He was wounded. George was wounded in the chest, the arm, and in the buttocks, which for me is the most, as you're trying to run away. I mean, he Forrest Gumped him, right?
You're not going to bleed out usually from your Mm-mm. ass injury, but...
No, but he's running.
But he's running.
He's yeah. running. So I imagine that had to have hurt like hell.
And
aside from the chest and arm, of course.
Down.
Yes, absolutely. He made it a half a block before collapsing. And this was so sad, Megan. He actually died in the arms of a stranger who was just passing by.
Can
he
you
ran
imagine?
Right into the arms of a stranger.
And you're out enjoying an evening walk or maybe even headed to the bar yourself to grab a drink.
It's
and instead a man dies in your arms.
Yep. It's a February in Tampa, Florida. You're excited that the weather is only nice where you're at and it's crappy everywhere else. And here is this bleeding man who just dies in your arm. And he...
And terrifying that he probably is evidently shot. So yes. A bleeding man dying in your arms who's clearly been shot. And you're laying there holding this guy, looking around going, Jesus Christ, who am shot I next?
Him. Yes, exactly. Who is the person still following him?
Correct.
And it is very... It's his arm. It's his chest. So yeah, he would be obvious, you know, obvious wounds. And this person, just described as a bystander, actually was ministering to him, was trying to soothe him, was trying to keep him alert. And miraculously enough, George was able to whisper Henry Lee Marshall's name before he died.
Oh, God.
So this person knew, you know, he gave that information to the police. Now, at this point, I'm sure it comes as no surprise when I tell you that Henry Lee Marshall fled, but the police have his name from the person, the innocent bystander here. And what's interesting to me is that Henry Marshall had no prior criminal history up to this point. So you, either you've been off the police radar for this long, for about 35 years.
Yeah.
Or you just really escalated so much from no criminal history to murder?
Obsession does crazy things to brains, Charnel.
That is how I started this case, by letting you know it was obsession gone just completely wrong.
And it has to be, and I think you've made it pretty clear from her attempts to end the relationship and how it's escalated. This man could have had a completely Krispy Kreme? Crisp and clean is where I was going, but Krispy Kreme came out.
Okay.
A crisp and clean. Do you have any donuts?
It sounds amazing it right does. Now.
Okay.
Yes. Krispy Sorry Kreme, to make sponsor light of us. It,
right? But that's exactly what has happened here is he has had a break, and I'm not saying that means he's incompetent, but he's had a break internally where he is involved in this obsessive love that he is not going to make normal, rational decisions, including other people's lives.
Listen, Martha was on that documentary and she was a lovely woman. I could see why it would be hard to let her go. But this isn't okay, dude. Now, he decides he knows that he has to flee the Tampa area. Okay. In 1983, it's a lot easier to do.
Now, he's not having a problem giving her up now that he has to flee, is
Isn't
he?
Isn't that interesting? Well,
weird how the save your ass syndrome kicks in.
Did you say cox in?
Cox in. Now, I was talking like Wes when he says like car.
He does, yeah, car.
It was my Boston accent. I apologize. I've never been to Boston, but it grows on you.
From afar.
Yeah.
Weird, just one day you wake up with the Boston accent.
That's right.
So he actually, interesting though, it does bring him back. We'll get to it. But he first goes to Dallas, Texas, where he gets himself a fake ID. So now he is no longer Henry Lee Marshall. He is now none other than Benny Thomas.
Still two first names.
Right? This is what I'm saying.
Benny Thomas.
He's Benny Thomas. We can't get away from those first names?
If you're going to try to change your name, you should pick a less killery one.
I would think.
Yeah.
Yep. So here he is. Henry Lee Marshall is now Benny Thomas. Now, one would think that being on the lam for first degree murder would make you not want to go back to the state that you were wanted in.
No, this is usually the case.
Yeah, but Henry's just not that bright, Megan.
Or right? He needs to be near her.
His obsession with her, him missing his family. You and I both know him missing his family is absolutely second to him missing Martha.
He is obsessed with stalking Martha.
He is. So in 1984, he goes back to Tampa and he's trying to make himself an honest living. All right. And at first it worked and he wasn't noticed. But being that close, he had to make contact with Martha. And so he does. He begins, how do you start this? Hey, this might be a little awkward. It's been a year, but are you over how I murdered the father, your lover, and the father of your five children yet? Because if you are, like, I'm totally single and ready to mingle.
No, I think that's probably exactly how this
that
went.
Goes.
The script is written that way in my head.
And, well, apparently Martha was not over it yet.
No.
Nope. She went ahead and contacted the police to let them know, hey,
and is scared to death.
Yes, exactly. Think about that. She saw how he is already capable of murdering someone, right? So what makes her stop? And she says that, like, she is living in fear this entire time.
Because when you're dealing with an obsessive stalker in terms of that particular part of the power and control wheel, they are often homicidal with you. Mm-hmm. It becomes the, if I can't have you, no one else can. Will.
Yes.
And they will take you out. That's why victims die.
Yes, exactly. And I just the fact that he's calling her up, like expecting her to invite him over for
the gall.
Nookie and tea.
The
I
gall.
Mean, come on. What are we doing here? That shows you.
So it appears as if he's going to surrender his freedom so that he could have one last talk.
Right.
At least I'm hoping that's where we are.
Well, not yet. Great. Because he gets wind that the police have been tipped off, so now he flees to Atlanta. Okay.
Okay.
Because there's no criminals there.
None. Dallas and Atlanta are very small towns.
Yes. No crime happens.
Nope, no crime there.
So in Atlanta, he gets a vehicle, and it's a van, and he starts.
Is it white?
Nope. It's actually.
You actually know the color?
I don't. I shouldn't say that I do. Nope, because I didn't ever see it written.
I was being an asshole. No. I thought maybe it said like free hugs on the side of it or something.
I was. There is something on the side of it, and we are going to get to that. It's like you know what are in my notes. You predicted him going back to Martha. Now you know there's something on the side of his van. It does not say free candy.
It's not my first day.
Or hot tacos.
I know these offenders. They're all for sure. Every case is unique. I would never mean to generalize a victim or a survivor or even the defendants in these cases because they're all unique in terms of their reasons and whatever. But they all have the same basic pattern when you're dealing with an obsessive offender, and you tipped me off to begin with.
Humans do. I mean, we are pretty, there are a lot of things that are pretty textbooks.
That's and I'm textbook. Kind and I'm a human and I also and do human things.
There's a whole DSM about how textbook human and the mental capacity of them really are.
And their textbook interactions when they're in a particular diagnosed state.
For sure. What I was going to say was I thought the van was maroon, but then I realized I'm actually just making that up from the documentary, not from actually seeing it in print.
Because they showed a van and it was maroon.
Yeah, I don't know that that's what color it is.
Okay. Did it say like dramatic reenactment at the bottom?
Probably.
It better have.
I'm sure otherwise it is just
otherwise
not okay.
I will totally talk about a maroon van in the new case. They'll be like, it was white. You should contact 2020 then because they didn't say dramatic reenactment at the bottom.
Well, and this we do know, Megan, on the side of the van. By the way, let me tell you why he got the van. A, to live in it. Okay, because it's, cheaper.
Well, and because it's harder to find somebody who's mobile instead of establishing roots in like an apartment or a home.
Definitely. But he also had himself a shoe shining business. That's how he's going to make an honest living. Shining some shoes.
In the 80s?
1984. All those businessmen, CEOs, certainly. They go out on their lunch break, have themselves a cig and a shoe shine.
Okay.
That was hard to say, everybody.
A cig and a shoe shine.
A cig and a shoe shine.
Two bits.
Yeah. And so you know what he put on his van? It just said shine.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah, and then he'd park at a corner or on a curb, whatever.
Should have said, I'll shine it for a quarter.
Say shine. He got different clientele that way.
Yeah.
So it just said shine.
He deserves it.
And then that's true. And then he would set up his little shoe shining box, and he would just shine some shoes. But he says in that documentary, but the events that are about to take place, he thinks is actually because he put shine on the side of his van and drew attention to himself. He lives that way for quite some time, and he thinks between police profiling, because I haven't mentioned it yet, but he's a black man.
Oh, okay.
And between police profiling and this sign that said shine on his van, one day in Atlanta, he got pulled over by the police, and they told him that the van was like driving erratically, but he claims he was not driving erratically. He thinks that it was that he put himself on the radar with the shine, and because he was black being profiled.
That might be the case. That might be true.
It really might be. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. But regardless, when they pull him over and they do search the van for drugs and there are no drugs, they see that Benny Thomas's ID, it was expired.
Okay. Also it's fake, but they don't know that.
Sure
yet.
Is. They don't. Nope. It's expired. So they arrest him for the expired license. Now, he's pretty ticked off because he's thinking, I bought this thing and they told me it was good for several years. He never actually looked at the expiration date. So poor old Benny Thomas. got himself arrested for an expired driving on an expired license. I don't know if that would get you arrested today.
No.
But
up until very recently, yes. So, oh, okay. Bail reform legislation actually came through in Michigan. So side note, and it has mirrored many other states where certain misdemeanors are not any longer considered arrestable offenses. Instead, they give you an appearance ticket and it's done as a summons and a complaint where you must appear in court at your date.
Nice.
And it's an automatic PR bond.
Okay.
And then I deal with them. If they don't show up, then they get arrested.
Right.
But this would not happen today. Then, they saw that he was committing a misdemeanor and so they arrested him.
Yes.
And
yes,
you can do that.
Yes, they did. And of course, at this point in time, Henry is thinking that he's toast because they know they're going to fingerprint him.
Because he's a murderer?
Right. But the police don't know that yet.
No.
But he knows they're going to fingerprint me and they're going to figure out that I am wanted for first degree murder.
And I'm not Benny.
Right. And he is still telling them that he is. He's not saying nothing.
You know, I want to bust in a song right now, right?
I know.
Okay.
I know. Just... so bad. I can feel it in the air.
Okay.
So he spends the night in jail. And to his surprise, the next day they come and they tell him that he's free to go.
Ooh, mm-hmm. This is interesting.
They told him to renew his license and that he is free to go. What they really think happened is that back in the 80s, the lag between getting the fingerprints to the FBI bought Benny some time. His name's Henry, but now he goes by Benny, so I'm calling him Benny. All right.
Given his assumption that he believes he had committed the actual offense of driving while black.
Right.
It's true.
Yes.
It is highly possible that if he was profiled.
Yes.
And they did not find any drugs, but they had searched him, that they arrest him on a minimal traffic violation to cover the arrest. We're talking about Atlanta in the 80s, y'all. Yep. Okay. Yep. And then when they realize this is kind of, we didn't find anything. We can't find any, you know, criminal activity that this black man committed, at least in front of us. So they let him go.
Yeah.
They PR'd him. Yes. And then a legitimate thing might have been that he's sitting in there on a traffic offense. And in downtown Atlanta, they're like, let the traffic offenders out on PR bonds, please. Yes. Because we don't have time to hold them. It's fine. Let's move on.
Well, I agree with you because interesting in the documentary, they were just like, well, you know, there was a lag of time between when the fingerprints got to the FBI. And I was like,
How long, how do you really think they're holding somebody on like a really super stupid minimal traffic misdemeanor that they're going to be in a rush to get the fingerprints to the lab on this?
No.
They're just not, exactly. You guys.
That's another reason why I think he was more so profiled than anything. It wasn't a serious arrest. But
so he's
going to say that.
He's released because they clearly don't know that he's not Benny.
Right. And at this point in time, he travels all over the United States living out of his van. And he would...
Shine in shoes.
He'd check in with his family back in Tampa from time to time.
Who knows that he's wanted for murder?
Sure do. Yeah.
What lovely people.
They are. They really are. He lives like this for 9 years.
Okay? 9 years?
9 years.
Have you just taken us to 1990?
1992, my friend.
It was a good year.
Yeah.
It was a great year, actually. I was listening to Smashing Pumpkins and Stone Temple Pilots, wearing wide leg jeans and velvet shirts, midriffs.
Yep.
Yeah. Sometimes a flannel and a white t-shirt if I wanted to pull out my inner Nirvana or some Pearl Jam.
I was in second grade asking my sister to do my hair like Madonna.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I was doing.
Perfect.
So here he is in 1992, and he's got to use a payphone to call in, check in with his brother. Okay. And yes, I had the same thought, by the way, of like, seems like his family could be like, hey, he checked in with us again. Now he's in New York. Hey, he checked in with us again. Now he's in San Fran. Like, come
on. Don't make yourself a fucking accessory. Yeah. And we don't charge a ton with those anymore. But was law enforcement still consistently going to his family, keeping an eye on it?
Oh, yeah. Like, they're still actively on this.
Well,
case.
Now you know what would happen. They'd freaking subpoena phone records and do search warrants for phone records to try to find this guy.
Yeah.
He's wanted for murder.
Right.
It's not like he, you know, robbed an ice cream store.
No. And so what his brother tells him is, and this is 1992, he's like, you know what? Mama's sick and dying. She had a couple of different ailments, but just like that scene in Forrest Gump when Forrest learns his mama's dying and he jumps out of the shrimping boat.
Yeah.
This is what Henry does.
He drove his white shoeshine van right to Tampa.
Sure did. Yep. He gets in his van, drives right back to Tampa to care for his dying mother. And for a bit, things are fine. He's still shining shoes on the side. That is also hard to say.
Yes,
still shining shoes on the side. And this is what I find lovely about the universe and the way that energy works, okay? Because one day, Megan, Henry Lee Marshall feels that he just needs one more day of shoe shining.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say he needed to see her one more time.
Nope. No, no, no. He decides that he needs one more day of shoe shining and he would have enough saved up to leave again when mama passes. Okay? That's all it takes, one more day. So he's working downtown. I grew an accent too.
Tampa?
Downtown Tampa.
This guy is not on the top of the IQ chart.
No, no. I told you he was not the sharpest.
Your Forrest Gump
in a lot of different
analogy
ways.
Analogy is true. I may not be a smart man, Charnel.
But I know what love is.
It's not that.
It's not. He knows what obsession
is. It's not, Benny.
So here he is. He gets this really weird feeling that he needs to move locations of his shoe shining while he's working downtown.
Yes. Trust that instinct, buddy.
Well, this is where the universe is beautiful. Because he does. He moves himself. And this is where the universe decided to have him while he's moving to his new location, carrying his little shoe shine box, where he is spotted by no other than Martha Leathers herself.
Hell yes, universe.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes, it is.
He felt compelled. He thought he might be in danger. So he moves himself right into the line of sight.
Don't you ever wish that somebody who had done you wrong just happens to walk themselves right up to you one of these days or by you so that you can say, hey, you, hey, come back.
Hey, how's it going?
This is karma now, putting us together once again.
In our small town, it could happen.
Oh,
but
for
in
sure.
Tampa?
No, but think about if there was somebody that had wronged you, like an ex-boyfriend from another town, and then all of a sudden he's walking by you in your hometown. You're like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Right.
Wait, 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 wait.
You think you're just going to walk
Thank
on by?
Thank you, universe, for dropping this opportunity in my lap.
Yep.
And that's what happened.
That is exactly what happened. Now, as I said, Tampa's not small. So statistically speaking, this is pretty insane that this happened. Martha had been driving a friend to the bank, and she had just parked and got out of her car when she saw Henry Lee Marshall walking by the car. I mean, it was that divine of timing. She had just parked into a parking space right there on the street.
Yes.
And he was walking by. Now, I will tell you, she was a little bit hysterical. She's been terrified of him for 9 years, okay?
She immediately probably thinks he's following her or stalking her.
Yeah, absolutely. So she grabs her friend, they go into the bank, and she asks the bank teller to call 911.
There is a murderer on the loose.
Yep. So Henry Lee had actually decided that the corner by the bank was a swell place to set up his shoe shining, especially because it was the lunch hour rush.
Karma led him there, Charnel.
Sure did. Yes, yes, yes.
The universe.
Yep. And he just needs a little bit more money so he can flee again. And it's funny that you say karma. It's actually written in my notes here. I wrote, I know y'all have heard of karma. It's just energy, and what you put out comes back to you in various ways.
Sometimes threefold, depending on what spirituality you practice.
That's right. And this time, the karmic energy of killing George and fleeing came back to him by placing him in the right place at the right time to be identified, just when he thought he was going to get away with it. The police do respond quickly. They surround him while he's shining shoes. They didn't pull up in cruisers with lights a-blaring and giving him the opportunity to run again.
Yeah.
They surround him quietly from all angles. And actually, it was so quiet that he thinks he's going to explain all this away by being Benny Thomas. He's like, oh, no.
Oh,
cool.
That's not me. I'm Benny.
He's cool, calm, and collected.
I'm a shoe-shining Benny from Atlanta, and here's my ID.
Yep.
Actually, his ID is probably from Texas.
Texas. Yep. Here I am, just a Benny Thomas from Texas, shining shoes in Atlanta.
What a coincidence that I look like this killer.
He was so calm and cool about it. They actually brought Martha over.
Shit.
To identify him.
Wait till you take him to the station.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't want to arrest an innocent man.
No, exactly. And
good job, Tampa.
So they do bring Martha is crying. She absolutely positively identifies him as Henry Lee Marshall. And he is arrested right there on the spot for first degree murder charges.
Good.
Now, It took a night in jail, but the jig was finally up and they let him know that his fingerprints came back positively identifying him as Henry Lee Marshall, and he can drop the Benny, Thomas malarkey.
Benny, this is called roll tape. Yeah. We're going to show you these fingerprints. This is not you. What's your real name?
Yep.
We already know it.
but we have to ask you anyway for the record.
Yeah.
2 months after his arrest, Mama passes away.
Well, I'm sorry that Mama passed away. Yeah. She, raised a murderer, but I don't know how much she had to do with how he actually turned out. He loved Mama enough to come home to say his goodbyes.
He did. Yes. And he did miss his family that one time and come back.
I think when you're obsessive in general and have those connections.
Right. You hang on to him.
He does have an issue with hanging on to things.
So just before he was about to go to trial for this, he actually suffered a really severe stroke himself. And it delayed his trial for over a year. However, he did finally have a trial. And in 1994, he was found guilty of first-degree murder of George O'Neill. And he was sentenced to life in prison.
Okay.
And he did, in fact, serve a life sentence because December 21st, 2021, he died in prison of undisclosed causes.
Okay.
I gave you closure. The closure.
I never get
to do that.
I don't even know what to say now. Usually at this point, there's stuff about appeals that I need to talk about.
No.
And this murderer living on death row or living out his life sentence. And, was he up for parole? And were there hearings? And instead you gave me, God took him.
God took him.
Or someone
and
did.
Yes, and kept him.
And kept him.
It's not like the Anne Green case. Remember where she died, and then it's like, she served her sentence?
Yeah,
it's
she till did.
Death.
She sure did, though.
She died, and then she came back. So,
okay.
Yeah, no. The end. Now you know the rest of the story, and
I love that
I got to bring closure.
You did. All of a sudden, my stomach is like.
Justice worked.
The butterflies left.
It took 9 years, and poor Martha and her children had to live in fear for 9 years before they saw justice. Actually, live in fear for 9 years, had to. It was 12 years before they got the justice part. But,
right, but at least he was incarcerated, so they weren't living in fear. They knew where he was the last few years, or a couple years when he was arrested, right? No, it was one, because he got arrested and then had to wait a year for trial, right? Because of the stroke?
He had the stroke. Yeah. So
she at least wasn't in fear then, assuming she knew he was locked up.
Yeah.
That survivor went through so much with her family in terms of the unknown. Mm-hmm. You guys just put yourself in that position where someone who's committed like the worst crime possible against your family is just still out there. And we talk to survivors and families of victims all the time who feel that way. Just that pit of the stomach feeling when you go to sleep every night that somebody took away your loved ones and they're still there and they could come find you at any time or they could do it again.
Well,
I can't believe he hasn't committed any other crimes.
I know. And he,
it's because he was obsessed with her.
Yes. An obsession case for sure. But think about something that I was thinking about too, was imagine for 9 years raising your 5 children and not knowing, is he going to come after one of them, especially the one that got into a physical altercation with him? How terrifying. What an absolute terrifying way to live. So I'm happy that justice happened in this case. He really did live out his life sentence. He did that documentary in, I think, like 2018 or 19.
Did he appear on the documentary?
He did. Yeah, you
did
can
he
hear
say
him talk.
Anything worth saying?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all.
And that's how Charnel feels about that part of the documentary.
That's right. No.
He really had nothing to offer.
He didn't. He was excited to be talking to other people that have nothing to do with the prison. I think he felt a little bit like a celebrity being interviewed for this documentary.
He didn't express any remorse.
Oh God, no. There is none of that.
Okay.
No. He was answering their questions.
Didn't make any statements about how he was a violent, obsessed offender and he just couldn't get Martha out of his head
No.
Clearly.
And let's be fair, maybe the show cut it out because, it's only 12 minutes of content and then the rest of it's, consumerism with the ads. It's a 30-minute show.
Fair enough.
So maybe he did and they just didn't care to show that side of him.
From this got this part of the story and also a renewed interest in purchasing Scope mouthwash.
Yes. Actually, it is a body odor thing that you
Lume.
That you can put everywhere. They show that like every 2 episodes. Commercials.
I will tell you that my personal review for Lume is that it does work, but it doesn't smell very good.
I've heard that.
It has a weird after odor to it. And you can get like original and like blood orange and lavender and rose or whatever. And they do smell like those things, but they also have a weird other smell to them.
Hmm. Yeah, no thanks. But there, it was just, I happened to notice it lately. Yeah. I rarely watch TV, so I'm even more perturbed by ads because they just annoy me.
Do you find, and isn't it funny now that doing this, what I fall asleep a lot. I know this is really terrible watching like crime stuff. Mm-hmm. I'll just put it on to fall asleep too. Mm-hmm. And if there's one that's really good, I'll wake up. I did one night have to run downstairs and grab the laptop so I could start taking notes at like 2 o'clock in the morning.
That's funny.
I was tired.
Yeah.
The next day.
Well, if I'm...
I was afraid I couldn't find it again.
Before we started recording, I think I told you, I happened to just turn... Listen, I was just turning the TV on for the dogs more than me because I was cleaning. And I got sucked into it because I was listening to him talk without his teeth and I was just like, what does this Emma forgot to say?
Right.
And then I got sucked into the story. I'm like, oh, okay, well, I've sat here long enough now. I think that I should look up some other things and get all the details here and make an episode out of it. And so here we are. This is how this happened. I don't usually cover documentary stuff, but this one, you know, I thought
it was a good one.
Who is going to cover poor George O'Neill?
No one.
Right.
No one. I bet there's no podcast on George O'Neill.
Right. He's got he is worth remembering for crying out loud.
Are you going to bathe us?
Oh, I am. I am. From careeraddict.com.
Oh.
I'm going to bathe you.
Okay.
Because I typed in embarrassing work stories. I wanted to see what would come up.
Okay.
All right. As you would expect, and I bet this has happened to more people than just me, because it has definitely happened to me. I love you. No, I don't love you. For this anonymous and ashamed employee, a well-regretted phone call left her humiliated at work.
We've discussed this.
Yep.
Or a text or a phone call. It's the phone call usually.
Yeah, because when you're saying goodbye.
Okay, officer, I'll talk to you later. Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.
No.
Exactly. Don't tell my husband who works with you.
He's probably sitting next to me.
Right.
Laughing.
No, I've done it. How many of us have done that? Accidentally said, I love you to our boss. Now, this is where it gets even worse. I think I just have like this feeling from this particular writer that this guy was probably like all business, no personality whatsoever, only has missionary sex.
I know.
Because, yeah.
They're not my people, though.
She said, oh my God, I didn't mean that. I absolutely don't love you. I mean, I like working for you, but I know you're married. I'm married. I'm not flirting. So you're please don't report me to HR for harassment. And instead of saying, being a human and being like, no, I understand, he just hung up. Like, give her something, man. It was a total accident. Like, don't be that guy that just hangs up.
No, my life would be, like, I would be obsessing about this.
Oh, yeah. That is so much worse.
It hurts your stomach.
The hanging up after oversplaining is worse than saying I love you and just leaving it hanging
in the air. You guys, if you know someone who is an over-explainer when they've done something, at least acknowledge it's okay.
Yeah, that's all you have to say.
I realize this was an unintended statement you made.
Yes. Exactly, because that's so much worse.
But don't respond, I love you too, unless you do.
Right.
Unless you do.
Yes, which a lot of my coworkers I do, so I get that. But how about this one? This one is a little quirky. We all have strange habits that make our daily lives much easier, but Anderson from Virginia, for example, likes to drive with no shoes on, which is fine and dandy until you realize you're driving to work.
Oh,
but
with no shoes to put on when you get there.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, I take my heels off to drive it.
I'm currently wearing Uggs.
Yes.
With a three-piece suit.
Yep. Yes, you are.
Yes, I am.
Because it's much easier than driving in your heels, I would imagine.
Especially, I do drive in my heels, but when the weather is iffy and I might run into any ice, I just err on the side of being Mrs. Rogers. And I take my shoes off and my sweater and I change into my car driving clothes.
For sure. Exactly. But apparently this gal doesn't take her shoes, like wear her shoes to the car, which she probably parks in a garage or something like that.
Carry your shoes, lady.
Nope. So she got to work and she is actually a psychotherapist. And she had to work.
I have so many things
to
say.
All day seeing her patients shaking their hands barefoot, which they never said a thing.
I wouldn't either.
No, me neither.
Because God bless all of you who are my friends that do psychotherapy. But if I walked into my therapist's office and she was sitting there in her dress clothes, barefoot, with her knees crossed up on her couch, I wouldn't even fucking think anything of it.
No, me neither.
You know what? If you walked into a lawyer's office and they were sitting there barefoot, I bet you wouldn't like it very much, would you? Or your doctor.
Oh my God. You just put that into a amazing perspective. I would not be okay with a barefoot doctor.
I know.
Why is
that? But
is this
funny that with your therapist, she'd be like, eh, she's a little weird.
I actually know lots of therapists I've worked with that I've sat in their office and they've kicked off their shoes before.
Yes.
You're so
but
right.
But as soon as you're wearing a white coat, when you kick off your shoes and take your coat off and unbutton the top button in your shirt, people get all uncomfortable.
And I'm in the stirrups. Yep. That's when I get uncomfortable.
And then he says, why don't we both get a little bit more uncomfortable here?
And I say, well, I'm already in the stirrups. So
I don't think you can do that for me, but you have at it, sir.
Oh, my God. You're right. You are absolutely right. Okay, now this one I'm going to end us on the toilet blunder.
Okay? I mean, it's happened to both of us before. We might as well.
Right. Oh, yeah. The world does know about my biggest toilet blunder, don't they now?
Michael's.
Yes. Yes. Yes, that is it. Well, thank you for reminding everyone.
We've all been there.
And if you haven't listened to this podcast long enough, you're really missing out.
You are.
All right. It says, ever been goofy and awkward in front of a handsome guy or girl?
Yes.
Absolutely.
All the time.
On the daily.
Yeah. Yep. This, just for the record, it does not matter whether you're married. If confronted with some human that is ridiculously nice looking, you are going to have a weird adverse reaction.
Every time.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I actually watch women do that with my husband.
Really?
Yes.
You like to watch their like jaws drop and whatever.
They do have they do a double take and then yes. They're staring at his stupid eyes. And I mean, I love him dearly, but the eyes, man, people have to mention his
eyes
all
the
time.
They are very pretty.
They are.
You're so sweet because I was just being narcissistic. I'm like, yeah, I see men drop their jaws at me all the time.
For real, it does.
I'm kidding, but I do often get it not so much as oh my God, you're so gorgeous, but more along the lines of oh, you weren't what I expected. We talked about this with my position anyway.
Too. Yeah.
Like especially in the summer, and I take my blazer off, and I'm wearing just a shell or a tank top because what do I have that a lot of judges don't?
The tattoos.
A lot of tattoos.
They're gorgeous.
So mm-hmm. Yeah, here I am covered in tattoos, wearing a rock band T-shirt that I had underneath my blazer and robe, and they're like, oh. Oh, you're the person I need to talk to about Bond. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, Mr.
And
Attorney from Detroit.
You don't.
Wearing your $7,000 three-piece suit.
Right. And this is why we don't judge a book by its cover.
No, no. Sure. You should read me from front to back.
But this, I could, you actually. This particular person apparently gets very awkward when confronted with a handsome guy or girl.
Okay.
All right. And so she starts this new office job and she said, she writes, from blushing and stuttering every time this her new boss spoke to her, she was saying like yes in a high-pitched tone or just being totally awkward.
That's so
okay.
Awful.
It's her first day. She's sweating every time he, you know, comes near her. Just when she thinks things can't get worse. She goes to the restroom, she opens the door, and inside, doing a very evil-smelling number two, was none other than her handsome boss, red-faced, at the sight of her seeing him.
Oh, my God.
She walked into the wrong bathroom.
Oh, my God. But he didn't have it locked.
Apparently not. Apparently not. Could you imagine being so nervous all day about this good-looking guy talking to you and you know that you're effing it up
every
time?
And you walk in taking a shit?
I just... No.
How do you ever look at each other in the face again?
Never. You never do. You don't. Or it's one of those situations where they're married 10 years later. You know, it could go either way.
This is possible.
But, oh, yeah. Yeah, that. I mean, I don't know that you feel any cleaner after that story or all those stories.
I don't. So nothing like that has happened to me.
No. The only thing that has happened to me was that I was very new to a job and I went into the women's restroom and heard my boss having what I can only imagine were terrible stomach problems.
Yes.
And I just pretended like I was
you
never in there.
When you're in a public restroom, right? Because no, you don't want to be in there if you're having that. So that I can sympathize with. Sure. I think you can as well.
Yep. Sure
based
can.
Based off of a previous story. But yeah, no.
But never this, like walking in on another, I've never walked in to the wrong bathroom. I say that now. Stay tuned. It'll happen now that I've put it out there, everybody.
I once had I'm just going to go with a coworker. I'm not even going to say at what job this was, but suffice it to say that I work with law enforcement on a regular basis in every job I've had as an adult. And in one of these employments, a police officer came in and it was a duo. And both of them were incredibly good looking, but one of them was so good looking that it would be one of those situations where one might have a hard time talking to them. Okay.
And Officer Cutie Pie.
When this, right. Mm-hmm. And when this person would come in, all of a sudden my area of my office would become very popular with people needing things. Okay. Mm-hmm. And one of the females who's pretty outspoken, but not enough to be outspoken in front of him. Like she would turn red and stuff if mm-hmm. she was around him. She would usually wait until he left then to say something. Well, they had been in my office for a legal reason and then had presumably left.
Oh.
And she came up to my office door and walked in just enough that she said, "Oh my God, every time he comes in, I need to go home and change my panties."
No!
As Megan! He appeared behind her,
no!
also red-faced, and said, thanks for signing that for me. I'll see you soon. And left. And her everything melted. I watched her actual eyeballs melt off her face onto the ground.
I would rather shit in public where people could see me than make that statement and have the person hear me.
I don't know.
That one's, yep.
It was one of my favorite moments because it didn't happen to me.
Right. Because those are statements we have made before. It could easily happen to us if you're not careful of your 100%. Surroundings.
Absolutely.
Oh, no. I love that. Yep. Well, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us today and for listening. We just really, really appreciate it. And if you would like more of us, join Patreon. The link is in the show notes. Or you can Google it. We have it on our website. Our faces are there, too. We're going to get an updated picture at our Kappa Ball, Child Abuse Prevention and Awareness Ball.
If we can find one that makes me look slim.
You know, we'll get a good one.
Okay.
You always are looking gorgeous.
Thank
but,
you.
If for local listeners, if you would like to come to the charity event.
There are a few tickets left. Mm-hmm. So, but Child Abuse Prevention and Awareness, near and dear to my heart. I've been doing this ball for, this is the 8th year. It's actually the 9th year, but COVID fucked up one of them. And
yeah.
So, but I'm also really excited to get it over with.
I bet.
Because I'm exhausted.
I know.
It's exhausting to me.
It is, but it's a lovely time. And so if you're local and wondering about it, come join us, have fun, say hi, all that. All right. And until next time, everybody, we hope that you keep listening.
Keep it curious.
Bye-bye.